It is week 46 of the year 2021. The trees outside my window are yellow and orange, and there's a ray of sunshine piercing through the gray clouds. And this is Father Roderick to the max. Coming to you from my brand new studio here in Bennekom, the Netherlands. It's another episode of Father Roderick to the max. And I am so excited to be in this studio, to finally have finished setting up everything and arranging the equipment, setting up the cameras. I've got a very fast wired internet connection, despite the fact that this trusty little old MacBook, 11-inch MacBook from ages ago, only has two USB ports. I got myself a USB 2 connector, which now enables me to both connect this thing to a wired internet connection and also connect the Rodecaster and the camera at the same time. I was very surprised that it worked. I kind of expected this little machine to give up on stuff like that, but it's still going strong. And yesterday I did a live stream on streaming basically the recording of the regular show, and I think that went well. Got a little bit choppy when I tried to play a video in screen, but that would be exotic for many other laptops as well. So I'm really, really excited that everything is working and I can just sit down here and record a show. And it's all thanks to your support over this extended time of renovation. Your patience has been admirable, and that just kept me going. The fact that you as a community did not walk away, did not give up on me, but waited for me to basically settle in my new home and get ready to bring you new shows. And that's what I hope to do until the end of the year and way beyond that. In my other show, I've already told you some of the things that were happening in my when it comes to my work. So the documentary work that I was doing for Dutch TV is coming to an end. There will be another show next year, sometime around March, and I may have a small role in that, but it's nothing compared to the amount of work that I had for the previous 15 years or something like that. I've been doing this since forever, which is, on the one hand, it's a pity because I really love making this program, and it had a very large Dutch community of people that would watch it every single week, and also gave me a lot of feedback through social media, so I knew that it was actually really working for a lot of people. But then again, it's public television, so there are many other considerations that are being made as to how to reach the maximum amount of people. And of course, the broadcasting company that I work for that's not my company. And although we share a lot of values, they have a different goal, and also to a certain extent, also different ideas. So the downside is I kind of lose that work. I also lose the income that came with that, which was has been funding a lot of the Tridio work over the years. On the other hand, the positive side of this is it will free me up so much for my international work. And to what I plan to do is to just continue the work that I was already doing. So making the same kind of programs with the same quality, so as if I would be producing it for TV, but then bringing it to you as an international audience. And who knows, maybe I will be able to find some other platforms that would be willing to air this and to bring this to a larger community that I'm reaching myself on YouTube. And I'm really hoping that I'll be able to grow the community around these shows, these podcasts, around these newer video productions. So I have two more episodes that I need to edit for Dutch TV. Those are going to be the last ones. And I'm also thinking about a way to help my current audience, my Dutch audience, to bring them over to this side of the world. So to help them find these international productions that I'm going to make, I had a contract, or I still have a contract, to make a number of web episodes. And I've got, I think, budget for 10 more episodes. What I'm planning to do is to create a little kind of podcast-like live stream type of show in Dutch, in which for the next 5 weeks, I'll be trying to reach the current Dutch audience twice a week. And I will be talking about the transition and helping them to join this community, because that's one of the advantages of being Dutch. A lot of the people in the Netherlands speak Dutch, but also other languages. And English is one of the most common languages. Now, I did reach an older demographic with my TV show, so not everyone will be fluent in English, and maybe we'll have to figure out a way to subtitle, for instance, the new documentaries. But that is all feasible. That's a problem that is solvable. What I hope is that with a web show for the next 5 weeks, I'll be able to help people stay in touch with me. Another thing that I was thinking of was to create maybe mailing list or something like that. So I've always been dependent on the broadcasting company to reach that audience. And if I'm no longer on TV, a lot of the older people will just lose me. They will not know how to reach me otherwise, because they're not active on social media. However, most of them will still have email. And so if I can somehow bring them in and stay in touch, if only through email, I can always include some links to newer productions. On the other hand, am I going to set that up as something from the broadcasting company? The brand is going to continue. So I think I made a good elevator pitch for not throwing away the brand, which is Father Roderick Seeks the Light. That's my current brand, or just the name Father Roderick. But to continue, to at least let me continue the social media channels, albeit, of course, in a different way. Right now, these social media channels have mostly promoting the next show. So you'll have a promo for the next episode, etc. But I have about 5 weeks to make sure that people are able to stay in touch and that they can find these social media productions. So maybe I will just do that on my own accord. So create something that I am actually in control over, so that they can't take it away from me. Because that's kind of the problem with when you work for an external party like the broadcasting company. They are basically in control of everything. And the moment that they are no longer interested, you lose the community. And that's one of the biggest downsides, I think, of old-fashioned TV, of linear TV, linear radio, is they build community through that one channel. And they are not used to thinking in multiple ways to approach that audience and to bind them together. The only communication is through these traditional channels, whereas for the new media, or the newer media, it's not that new, it's very common to have people, to reach people through email, through Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, basically any of these channels that work, in addition to maybe also reaching them through traditional means. So it's this whole community building aspect that is very underdeveloped in the traditional media. And I don't know if I will have the time, because time is running out. You know, from at the end of this year, there will be no more new TV shows. And once you're kind of off the air, there is not much reason also to seek publicity. I have about 5 weeks to try to maintain part of that audience. I have to be realistic. The amount of people that follow, for instance, the Facebook page of the TV show is not even 5% of the people that watch the regular show on TV. But I think 5% is still a lot. If you look at the total amount, it's about 80,000 people that watch my TV show. So 5% of that is still considerable, and it's still, I think, worth it. So if I can get a couple of thousand people to start following my international productions, then, you know, maybe this will actually be beneficial to the entire community as well. It still is a part of, hopefully, a growth of the platform around my shows. So specifically, what I'm hoping to do is once I've finished the last two shows, which is basically going to be a compilation of a number of stories that I filmed in Rome over the years, in the Vatican, I want to start working on a regular documentary. I've got a couple of them that have already been produced. So we've got a three-part series on Scotland, where we filmed a number of scenes also in English. So we can do a recut, and it has to be an extensive recut. I can't just make minor modifications and then put it online. So we'll have to put some work in that. Of course, we have to replace all the music, because on TV, they pay for the rights to music. So we can use popular songs and whatnot. For this, we'll have to use non-copyrighted music. So on YouTube, thankfully, there's a pretty big library of generic music that you can use, and it's royalty free, and you can use it under any circumstance. Although that music is sometimes just not the best quality, and it isn't absolutely not the kind of music that I was used to use on TV. So that will require a bit of extra effort to make that work, but it's feasible. So we've got Scotland, I've got Ireland, that's also a three-parter. Or is it? No, it's a two-parter, I think. And for that, I've also, because it was filmed with my phone, I had no Dutch texts for that. So I do have a number of scenes where I'm talking to the camera in English. So I may be able to do a recut of that as well and bring that as a documentary. And I have a lot of material that I originally planned to turn into a documentary for Dutch TV. But now I'm thinking of just making an English product of that, or production. And that is material that I filmed in Spain. Not during the Camino, but during two summer holidays in Spain. One in the area of Seville, which is incredible. It's so beautiful there. And then another vacation that I spent with my priest colleagues in the eastern part of Spain, near the coastline. And that is also fascinating. Unfortunately, it was a short vacation and we didn't see that much, but I think I can expand the story a little bit with voiceovers. And maybe what I often do is I just add historical information. So I visit a city and then I do some research, and then you can also use pictures to illustrate the story or enhance the story. It doesn't always have to be filmed. But that is material that was never meant to be on TV. But I've done that before with other material. I just finished editing the third episode of a three-parter about France. And that was also based on material that I shot during two summer vacations. One was in 2017, and the other one was this year. And thankfully, I had brought my good camera with me and some good lenses this year. So I was able to integrate a number of scenes, a number of interviews that were really well done, well filmed, audio wise also. And still, I did have to work with some footage that I shot on my phone. So, for instance, we went to visit this priest in the neighboring village. He was the responsible priest, the pastor of the entire region. This man had, I think, 36 individual parishes to take care of. And it was only one other priest that helped him who was in his 90s. It's insane. I mean, we have trouble finding personnel here in the Netherlands, but that is something totally different. So anyway, we went to visit him kind of impromptu. We just stopped by. And I didn't have my camera gear. He was going to show us a miraculous image of the Virgin Mary that was found in the Middle Ages in a pebble, hidden in a pebble near the river. It was an extraordinary story. But before we knew it, he was running around in the church, and so the only camera I had I could use was my phone, the camera in my phone. Unfortunately, the church was very dark, and so a lot of the material is super grainy. And another thing that I discovered afterwards while editing was that even though it looked nice on my on the screen of my phone, it was for some reason the phone decided to film a number of scenes in 720p. So that is a very low resolution. It's 1280 times. I'm not even sure. So it's like half HD, which of course makes it even more blurry and even more grainy. And there's only so much that you can do with color correction and stuff to hide the defects. It was a moment in editing that I really decided my next phone has to, I think, be an iPhone. I have to go back to Apple, even though I love Android and I love the versatility. But I just need a work phone for when I am in situations where I need to film. I need something that is reliable and consistent in quality. And of course, the newer iPhones have incredible video capabilities. They can film in 4K without any problems. They've got built-in HDR. There is a lot of post-processing happening on the video to make it look nice. And I'm following my friend Mountain Butorek, who is a Catholic traveler in Rome. And he is streaming almost on a weekly basis from the city of Rome and posting photos and pictures. And he has an iPhone 11 or something like that. So not the newest model, as far as I know. And it looks so amazing. It's so hard to believe that was done with a phone. Now, my Zen phone is already pretty impressive what it can do. As long as it is filming in HD. But if it is just switching for whatever reason, it's not a setting that I accidentally activated. It just is so quirky when it comes to filming. And then you end up with this low resolution quality material. There's almost nothing that you can do with that. And anyway, I was still happy that I was able to film this this pastor and his story in the church, and with some voiceover and trickery. It looks presentable, but definitely not something that is on par with what I normally film. So now that I'm moving to this next phase where I'm going to do international productions, and hopefully I'll be able to, you know, bring that to TV stations as well. Why not? I need to make sure that I also go to the next level equipment-wise. So the phone is one of my most important devices because I can use it at any moment, but it needs to be reliable. Also, another thing, it would be nice if my next phone would be waterproof, because I've been filming in a canoe on a river. And at one point, I did not expect that river to be this wild. I got almost flooded. And a lot of water ended up on my phone and in my phone. Now, thankfully, it continued to work. But it scared me because that phone is absolutely not even water resistant. So that's another reason for me to at least have a secondary phone for filming that is waterproof for situations like that. And then for quality filming, I'm now using the Canon M50, which I have been using for a number of years now, with a couple of lenses that work fine. But it's also kind of showing its limitations, especially if you want to switch to 4K. It's got a tremendous crop. It doesn't have built-in stabilization, so if the lens has a stabilizer, then it looks nice. But I also have lenses that are, for instance, very sensitive to light, which sometimes in some situations you need. But then there is no stabilization whatsoever, and it makes everything look very shaky. And there's only so much that you can do in post-production. So I'm contemplating switching over to a Sony camera, either the Sony A7S III or there is a new Sony camera that just came out. It's the Sony, I think it's the A7 IV, Mark IV. It still has some limitations, so I'm not sure if that would be the perfect camera, or maybe I should just wait for the S4, but I need to go to a camera that has built-in stabilization where it's the sensor that is stabilized. So it doesn't matter what lens you put on it. All these will benefit from the stabilization that is inside the camera itself. Another reason for me to switch is that the amount of lenses that is available for the Sony cameras is much, much bigger. And it's a much better investment than getting new lenses for the M50 because Canon has kind of abandoned or almost abandoned the size for those lenses. So you can buy a lens that works fine on the M50, but then later on when you switch to another Canon camera, you won't be able to use those lenses anymore. Whereas Sony has been using the same size of lenses for many, many years. So even if you change the camera, the lenses will still work. So yeah. Considerations like that. But anyway, so that's what's going on in my professional life. I am dying to start working on these international productions and to grow the community. And because I'm now finally settled and the house is all but finished, I'm ready for this new phase in my life. And it's a challenge. It's going to be more of an adventure because I don't have anyone who tells me what to do, so I can make my own choices. And it's always a challenge to figure out what my audience wants or needs. So how am I going to grow the YouTube community? What am I going to focus more on documentaries only, or am I also going to continue the geek stuff? Well, of course I am, because that's part of my identity. Am I going to mix everything on one channel? That's questions like that. But I'll take my time to figure out what works well.
Just look at the X-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
For those of you that are active on the Discord server, you know that we have a water cooler corner, and that's basically for general topics. And I just created a health section there too, because I noticed that in the food section, the kitchen section, people were also posting about losing weight and stuff like that and eating healthy. But sometimes you just want to talk about health-related stuff. So I created a special section for that so we can support one another in staying healthy or getting healthy. And of course, health is a very important aspect of our lives because it enables us to do so much else. I don't think it's a goal in itself, and it's perfectly possible to have a meaningful life, even though your health is not perfect, or may be deficient even. But still, helping one and each other to grow and to stay healthy, I think that could be a valuable aspect of our community. When it comes to my own health, of course, I ran a marathon. I'm still in recovery right now. But as I mentioned in my other show, my regular show as well, I started to run in a group. I did that once, which for me was a huge step. Because as you know, as much as I love to communicate, I'm also an introverted person. I need time to recover. I've been in a situation at the Rectory of Father Henry where for 6 months I barely had a private life, like a time for myself. There was always something in the house. There were always people that require my attention. And it just made me super tired. And I'm enjoying the days, and they are still rare, the days that I am just alone. And I don't have to talk to people. It sounds crazy, I know, especially if you're not introverted yourself. But for me, that is so important. And I can so enjoy these days of silence and just having time for my own thoughts and being creative. But so for running was always a good escape for me, even in these past 6 months. One of the things that I enjoyed most about running and preparing for the marathon was I had some extensive time off and I didn't have to be among other people. So for me, running equates to having time for myself. And I often listen to audiobooks, and I don't listen to anything at all. I just go out for a 2-hour run, and I think about stuff. Sometimes I do an entire edit of a TV show in my head. So I'm going through, in my mind, while I'm running, I'm going through all the material that I have, and then I try to come up with a storyline. And so how can I combine these scenes? What's the order of the story going to be? And after 2 hours, I come back, and I did a workout, but I also have the blueprint of the TV show that I'm about to edit. But there is one downside, or multiple downsides, of when it comes to running alone, and that is you don't make that much progress. Now, of course, I make progress when it comes to distances, but I would like to up my game when it comes to speed. I'd like to run faster. And I know that, sure, I had my personal record during the Marathon of Rotterdam, so I ran it in 4 hours and 13 minutes. For me, that's huge. I never ran this fast. But I also know that people that are older than me can run the same marathon under the same conditions in 3 hours and 30 minutes, or even faster. And they're not different from me. They just trained differently. And so I was talking to this parish volunteer who came to interview me for a communications bulletin. And I discovered that he was actually a running coach. What are the odds that someone in my own parish, or it's not my parish, but in this parish, is also a running coach? And he told me, well, you know what, next Tuesday, if you want to join me, I'm going to be coaching a small group of people, and they're from various different backgrounds, various degrees of experience, and we're going to do speed work. And I think that, you know, if you really want to run faster, you would benefit tremendously from training with a group like this. And maybe if you like it, I mean, what I loved is that he was very, he didn't force me at all to join the group. He wasn't putting pressure on me, because then I would probably have not done it. But he's like, it's all up to you. Just come along. If you like it, you come another time. And after a while, if you really think that this helps you, then you can always sign up for the full year. And I think it's about 130 euros per year. So it's nothing. I mean, this is, I would be able to train multiple times per day. You can join specialized training seminars, etc. So that is very affordable for something that can help me a lot to run the next marathon in, well, why not, 3.5 hours. But I was also a bit apprehensive. I didn't know anyone of that group. So we met close by in the part, if you go east. If you've listened to the last episode of The Walk, I actually go in that same direction where there's no more pavement. There are just these nice villas of very rich people there. And then it extends into the woods, and it's a beautiful natural environment, some hills and everything. Not much traffic as well. So we met there the other day at night. It was already, I think, 7:30. It was really dark. I didn't have any I did have a reflective vest, but I didn't have the lights. I was looking for, you have these strap-on lights that will give you like white LEDs on the front and then red LEDs on your back. But thankfully, one of the other group members did have a spare one that I could wear. But because it was dark and everybody was wearing hats because it was also cold, it was like 5 degrees Celsius, I didn't really see all the faces. So I tried to remember the names, but we were about 10, I think, 10 or 12 people. And then the training itself was a lot harder than I thought it would be, especially because I'm not used to the speed work. So you do these intervals where you run at maximum speed for, I don't know, a kilometer or a few minutes, and then you slow down, and then you really have to slow down, which also is something counterintuitive. I'm very bad at running at a super slow speed, and then you accelerate again, etc. So the entire training took about an hour and a half or longer. Maybe even in total, I think I've been away for 2 hours. And it went very well. And I think I was able to keep up with even the faster runners. But I also, I'm still in recovery. So maybe I overdid it a little bit. But the most important takeaway from this group session was how much I enjoyed it. I loved it. And it wasn't as social as I feared it would be, in the sense that you weren't constantly talking to one another, because the training is very intense. So you do exchange some information, and you kind of complain about how cold it is. But there's also a lot of time where you're just running and force and focusing on the physical exercises. There was also a lot of these warm up and stretching stuff things, and I've never done that because I don't know how. I know that I'm supposed to do warming up and to loosen up my muscles, but I don't know how, and I usually just skip it because I'm lazy. But it's so helpful to have someone who just tells you what to do and also looks at your form. And if you don't do it the correct way, he will help you to do it better. And that too was like, wow, this is new. I've been running for more than 10 years. I ran, I don't know, 10 marathons, and I have never done something like this. And so it actually works as I hoped it would. It helps me to push myself to get better. So I'm hooked. Next Tuesday, I'm going to run again, and I'm pretty sure that I will sign up for an entire year, because now I'm getting the hang of this, and I want to... Again, it's also to have something to look forward to during the week. This was a very enjoyable evening. The alternative would have been to sit in front of the TV and watch Ted Lasso, which is also very enjoyable, but this was in many ways something new and exciting and very, very motivating. And to know that there is someone who is knowledgeable, can help me prevent injuries, especially in this phase between marathons, that's also a reassurance. It also makes it easier to go out and run. So, speaking of health, health kind of also starts in the kitchen. So let's pay that a visit. But what was the button again? I don't remember. This one? Yeah! It's been a while since I've been pressing these buttons. Hey, I've teased a few recipes for savory oatmeal. This is one of these things that I never thought I would try out. When we were young, my dad would always tell stories. My dad is a very funny guy, and he loves to tell stories. And so he in his youth, when he was a teenager and student, he often went to Scotland and to England. And he would just cruise around on a motorcycle. It's insane. I never been able to picture my dad doing stuff like that. But there was a time that he was young too, and so he loved, especially Scotland. That was his great love. And I always thought that Ireland was also a country that he went to often. But just recently, he told me that he never ever went to Ireland, which is strange because he loves the culture, he loves the music, the language, and he's never been there. But anyway, Scotland is good enough for me. And he told us these stories, like especially because we would always go on vacation in France, and so I remember that we, as children, we were fascinated by England. We wanted to cross the sea. And go to Scotland as well. And my dad would always say, well, no, we go to France because the food is so much better. The English don't know how to cook. This was my father, right? Don't shoot the messenger. And he said, and we were like, well, what kind of food do the English eat? And why don't you like that? And he said, well, you know what? There is this one thing that they eat. You eat porridge. Like we were used to eating porridge every morning with sugar, brown sugar, some cinnamon. And that would be very filling and very yummy. I loved starting the morning with, and sometimes I do that now with oatmeal, and I make myself a nice not always, because it's a hassle to prepare and also to clean up afterwards, because oatmeal has a tendency to stick to everything. So, but I really liked starting the morning with a warm bowl of porridge. And he said, you know what the English do? They put salt in their porridge. And we were like, oh, that's horrible. Oh, no wonder that we always go to France, because then the French people, they eat croissants for breakfast with jam, and they have nice sausages and nice cheeses. But who puts salt in porridge? I always remember that as the quintessential example why the people in England don't know how to cook. It's like, who would put salt in their porridge? Well, I recently joined the club. Of course, what my father was exaggerating was basically that the English are, the English, as if they exist, in England, they were probably making savory oatmeal or savory porridge. And I came across a couple of recipes in my quest for alternatives for the classic Dutch breakfast. I talked about this in earlier episodes as well. So I'd like to start my day with a breakfast that is exciting. And I want to, especially now that I have a kitchen, I want to just try out breakfast habits from other cultures. And so I'm following a number of people on YouTube and on TikTok. And so I started to do, for instance, noodles or rice for breakfast. And it is very healthy and it's filling, and you can use some eggs and some protein in there. And in terms of calories, it's not much different from bread. It's unbelievable how many calories there are in the traditional Dutch breakfast with just two slices of bread and then some cheese and jam. Whereas once I started to do, for instance, like Asian breakfast with brown rice, or sometimes I have these whole wheat noodles that I prepare, and you make like a soup, you add an egg. At first it was a bit disconcerting, because I always associated breakfast with sweet stuff. But once I got the hang of it, I was like, well, why not? I really enjoy cooking this and I enjoy eating it. But, you know, after a lot of Asian type breakfasts, I was like, let's see what else I can do. And then I came across a few recipes for savory oatmeal. And I was like, oh, what the heck? I'm just going to try it out. So here's my recipe. This is what I've been doing. I've not been trying it out too many times. But what I do is I take 1 cup of oatmeal, like it's actually half a cup, American measures. I thankfully have a set of measuring cups that someone from the US sent to me. And so you take 1 cup of oatmeal, and I just use the steel ground, but anyway, it's more of a finer oatmeal, which is easier to prepare. Or accidentally, I bought just regular oatmeal, so I'm now using that. But that requires a little bit more time to cook. So 1 cup of oatmeal, 2 cups of water. That's it. And then, this is where the savory stuff comes in. You add a bit of salt, or in my case, even better, I add a bit of concentrated stock. So it can be chicken stock, vegetable stock, beef stock. I've been using half a cube of beef stock the other day, and I use that for twice the amount. So I use 2 cups of oatmeal and 4 cups of water. So I have some spare oatmeal. What I also did sometimes was just soak it the day before in the fridge. Just I put everything in the fridge, and then it's kind of pre-soaked, which makes cooking even faster. So you add a bit of stock, and then I add protein. So for instance, ham cubes or a bit of sliced bacon. Sometimes I make an egg sunny side up. I don't overcook it, because I really like to, for the yellow of the egg to mix with the oatmeal. And then another way to make it healthy, even healthier, because oatmeal in itself, of course, if you don't prepare it with milk, it's actually very low calorie-wise and it's full of nutrients. What I did now is I have these frozen cubes of spinach. So it's a cooked spinach, and it's been frozen in these little blocks. I add a 4 or something in the mixture, so it melts, and you mix it, and it gets green. It's like green smoothies. You can also do that with spinach. And so you even it, you can also use sausage, for instance, a bit of smoked sausage, any type of meat usually works. Once I sprinkled in some cheese, but the thing is, it just made it very sticky, and I couldn't really taste the cheese, or it didn't have a distinct taste. It made it saltier. But so the cheese wasn't really a favorite of mine to mix in, but that's another option. And then you just cook it for a couple of minutes until it becomes this like gooey porridge. And it's delicious. It is so good. It's so much better than regular porridge. I love it. And then there are many other combinations that you can make. And the fun thing about porridge is it's really hard to mess up if you go the savory route. You can try out all sorts of combinations. It's super cheap as well. You know, oatmeal is one of the cheapest breakfast options that I can imagine. And you can always use, for instance, leftover beef. I had a bit of ground beef the other day, which I had used in a pasta dish. But I had some leftover stuff that I already fried it in a pan. So I mixed that in the oatmeal, and my goodness, that was so yummy. That was really, really, really good. So I'm almost addicted now to savory oatmeal. And the only downside, ongoing downside, is that you have to clean the pan and the cutlery afterwards. And if I put it in a dishwasher, the oatmeal, the bits and pieces of the oatmeal will stick to anything. And it's so hard to remove, even in the dishwasher. So I wash it by hand. So that takes a bit more time. And then the trick is, if you wash, you have to wash your pans immediately. That helps. And use cold water. That sounds very counterintuitive, because you always use warm water to wash the dishes. But with oatmeal, warm water will make it stick even more. So use ice cold water. If you have a pan and you're scrubbing and the oatmeal doesn't come off, use cold water and ice cubes and let that sit for a while. And then it's almost magically it comes off. If you have any other suggestions for savory breakfast or oatmeal variants, then let me know in the kitchen section on Discord. The things you learn on the internet. Well, I am smartifying my home recently. You know that I'm a huge fan of kind of turning my home into a Star Trek Enterprise type vessel. I love to be able to just speak to my equipment and it will turn on the lights and start all sorts of routines. Now that I have Wi-Fi and a good internet connection, I was finally able to reprogram all my devices and lamps, and I've been trying to figure out how to optimize it for every room. I have a few of these Google displays, these small hubs, which are really useful because you can use them also to turn on lights. And I have a big hub a Nest hub in the kitchen that I use often for tutorials. So for recipes, for instance, I could just ask YouTube to show me a recipe for savory oatmeal or noodles or whatever. You can also let it show you like photos. So I connected my phones to Google Photos and it will make an automatic selection of more recent photos. And it does a lot of trickery to the photos, so they look amazing. And it's so much fun. You can also have it display art or professional photos, but there's always a disconnect when I see other people's photos. It's like, oh, that looks beautiful. When was I in Iceland? I don't remember. It's like, oh, it's just these generic photos. So it's not as personal as just seeing your own stuff and the people also that you love. So I have that as a display. So every time I walk by, I see photos, and it helps me to it reminds me of nice events in the past. So I have a number of those. I also have just speakers that I have in every room, and you can create groups of speakers. So in the morning, I can start my day by playing music, for instance, from Spotify, and wherever you are in the house, you will hear that music, and you don't have to wear headphones for that, which, you know, I like wearing headphones when there's a lot of noise outside, and I just got a pair of Sony headphones with active noise canceling, and they are amazing. I'll review them probably next week on the show, on the regular show. But it's also a bit of a hassle to walk around with headphones all the time. Sometimes I just want to have music surround me in a certain way. So the smart speakers allow me to do that. The only downside, of course, especially of lamps, I've got Philips Hue, which is expensive, but it's very, very good. So I have a number of light bulbs that are Philips Hue, especially for the studio. I figured if I want to have good quality lighting in the studio. So with these Philips Hue spots, I can change the color, the color of the white. I've got some white spots in the ceiling, spotlights, and then you can turn them from cold daylight to warm kind of candlelight settings. That works really well. And I've got some colored lights that I use in the background. For instance, if you've watched my reaction video to the Spider-Man trailer, you see that the background is lit. This is not a green screen. It's just a gray wall. This is in the small office that I have in the front part of the house. And I turned around the desk because I noticed that there's this big void, this wall that there's nothing on it. There's no furniture. And it is slightly gray. I used for the walls upstairs, I used this barely noticeable gray tint. But on camera, especially on the webcam, the gray is perfect to reflect colored light. So I've got two Philips Hue lights that I can program. And so, for instance, for the Spider-Man review, I had them in blue and red, and it gives this nice gradient in the background. It looks amazing. And Philips Hue is perfect with colors. It has millions of colors that you can generate. They're not very strong. So to light the entire backdrop, I'll probably have to switch to a newer type that they just launched, where you can go up to 1600 lumen, I think. The regular ones are 800 lumen, which is fine if the rest of the room is dark. But I've noticed that the lights have difficulty reaching the top of the screen. So I may actually have to get myself two bulbs just for the YouTube videos that I film in the office. Anyway, a cheaper option would be to use the IKEA lights. IKEA has a very affordable range of smart lights, and they have their own hub. The downside is that their colored lights don't have yellow, so they are less than half the price of what you pay for Philips Hue, and when you see them in the stores, you're like, wow, these look identical. And then you come home and you say, I want a yellow color, and then your lamp will just turn green because, well, there is no yellow. There are no yellow LEDs or something like that. There is a color missing, and so it can only show you a limited amount of colors. But for white, that's not a problem. You know, from warm white to cold white, that's identical to what Philips is offering. And these smart lights, especially if you take like the LED ones, the GU10 fitting, they are dirt cheap at IKEA, but they don't work with the Philips Hue system. So I thought. However, I found some information on the internet that shows you how to connect them to the Hue infrastructure. And so it is a hassle, and it took me forever for some of these lights to connect to the app. But now that I have them connected, I can also control the IKEA lights through the Hue app, and I can create these nice scenes where they will use both lamps. And I think this is because the IKEA lamps also use the same protocol called Zigbee. But it is a bit of a hassle to connect them. But once it works, it works really, really well. And it's a huge cost saver. So I was glad that I was able to figure that out. And I learned that on the internet.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
There are a ton of comic book-based productions that we are enjoying right now or that are just around the corner. I heard they have done a live-action version of Cowboy Bebop, which I've never read, but apparently it's a big thing. It's an animated series, and now they did a real-life variant of that. I may have to check that out because everybody says it's so good. And I think the animated version is also available on one of those streaming platforms. So that's fun. Of course, a lot of the Marvel movies are still based on superheroes from the comics. And I still have to watch Eternals. I'm hearing that it's not as good as the other Marvel movies, but, well, maybe I'll enjoy it. And then, of course, you've got the DC heroes. And just recently, Henry Cavill, who also plays The Witcher, has been doing a number of interviews. And apparently, I think he's worried that, you know, nobody wants to see another Superman movie. And so he'll lose that job. And so now he's been in every interview. He mentions that he would love to continue the story of Superman. And of course, the mistakes that Superman made in the past, well, maybe his character can now evolve and become a good Superman or a better Superman than he used to be, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he's just kind of angling for a... Is that how you say it? He's just looking for more movies and to hopefully make the fan base enthusiastic about him reprising the role of Superman. Because The Witcher, of course, it's Netflix, and it's very successful. But for how long? It's very volatile. Whereas with movies, you can usually negotiate bigger contracts as well. So what do you think? I'm kind of done with the current DC universe. I saw some stuff from the new Batman movie that is in production right now. And it's even darker. I'm so done with that darkness. The world is dark enough. But anyway, you know, that's my shtick to complain about the darkness of the DC-based movies. I'm a huge fan. I always have been a fan of Superman. I like the Superman character way more than Batman or any of the other DC characters. So yeah, but I would like to go back to a more cheerful Superman, one that is more the Superman of my youth. And maybe that's just because I'm an old guy and I'm nostalgic, but Superman to me was always a symbol of optimism. And even the colors of his costume, you know, it's like this bright blue and this beautiful red cape. In the movies, everything is toned down. All the colors are drab. Yeah, I think it's time for another version of Superman that kind of is a bringer of hope instead of just destroying everything and becoming almost a Batman-like figure. That's maybe one of the reasons that I never really connected with the Batman character because he's so brooding and so dark and that's just not my character. So I have a hard time understanding the motivations of Batman and his mindset is just not very encouraging. But now that they turned Superman dark, I just miss the old Superman. So if they are gonna try a different type of Superman, I don't think they have to continue. They should continue with Henry Cavill because he's too much the dark Superman. And after the mustache gate thing, I think it's risky for them to bring back Henry Cavill. They will still talk about, you know, make comparisons with the existing movies. And I don't know. Anyway, But I still think there's potential in the DC universe, a lot of it. They've got some great superheroes, great storylines, but for some reason it just never really connects with the same audience that loves to go to watch Marvel movies and has been watching Marvel movies for 10 years now. All right.
The humanoid must not escape.
I'm skipping the liturgy segment because I've already talked at length about the ordination liturgy and the whole meaning of ordinations in my regular show. But I do want to talk a little bit about video games because I've finally installed my Xbox. I don't have the newest Xbox, but the previous version, which still has a Blu-ray player. I hooked it up to my Philips TV, which has Ambilight, which is wonderful. It's like Hue, Philips Hue, but then for TVs. So it projects colored light around the frame. And it's surprisingly effective in immersing you into not just movies, but also video games. So, and now that I've connected my Xbox, it works with all that. And I've got a smaller sound bar, like a small sound, but it's just one sound bar and the subwoofer. But I'm surprised by the quality of the sound. It's a ton better than the built-in sound of the TV. I've been trying out my Xbox Game Pass Ultimate games, and that's a lot of fun to be able to play video games, kind of for free. I think I bought like a 3-year subscription for almost nothing. Because they were trying to get a lot of people hooked on their product. But what I like is that you don't have to... These are A-quality games, like the best quality games. For instance, the Forza 5, which is a racing game, is already available on Game Pass Ultimate. Normally, you'd pay $60 for that. And with the subscription model, you get basically all the games. They've got 100 games. And many of which are really, really good. And I don't have those games in my other game collections. Like, I don't have them on Steam. I don't even have a PlayStation right now. I've just got an old PlayStation 3 that I'm using as a Blu-ray player. So for me, it's so fun to be able to play video games. And in fact, I'm also happy that I can play them here in the studio. So it's the downstairs. The TV is just for watching TV. By the way, I've got this. It came with the internet connection. I've got this linear TV subscription now. That is terrible. I mean, linear TV, my goodness. I remembered it to be bad, but I did not expect it to be this bad. There's never anything on TV. It's insane. I don't know if this is just a European thing, but there is actually never anything that is worth watching. So I've had it for a couple of weeks now. There is not a single evening that I've watched regular TV. No, usually I just turn it on, and then I go through all the channels, and I'm just like, boring, 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 boring. It's like talk show after talk show after talk show, or news, but very kind of low-quality news. There are a few cooking channels, but then I'm thinking, oh, man, this takes forever. Let me just go on YouTube if I want to find a recipe, because then, or even better, on TikTok, and then I learn a new recipe in 1 minute instead of having to watch an hour to these shows. There was one thing that I liked. I found one Dutch channel, a commercial channel, and they had MasterChef Australia, but it was already towards the end of the season, and I did not watch the other episodes. But even then, you have to remember when that airs, and then like 5 times during the show, you have these interruptions with endless commercials. Ugh. And there's not a skip ads button for linear TV. Anyway, that's a bit of a digression. But linear TV. But I love to play video games here upstairs. I don't know. It just feels like I have my own place for video games. It feels different. It's a place where I enjoy being. And when I'm here, I was like, oh, let me try out this new video game or Microsoft Flight Simulator or Forza 5 or whatever. And then you got a lot of these smaller games that I would barely notice on other platforms. But because they're for free, I'm trying out a lot of these more indie games, and those are very enjoyable as well. The only downside of Game Pass Ultimate is that they will also remove games after a while. So there are some games that are now tagged as disappearing soon, just like what Netflix does and Amazon Prime. It's like, oh, but that looks like a fun game. Oh, I wish I'd started to play this game earlier. So that gives a bit of stress. And then, of course, what they hope is that you will buy the game if you like it. So there's not much durability. So a lot of these games will ultimately disappear again and you won't be able to play them. But then, on the other hand, there are so many games that I bought in the past and I never play them. Because time, a day only has 24 hours, and I need to sleep, I need to run, and I need to cook, and I need to make make a living as well. So gaming time is very, very limited. So for me, it's a good solution. All right, that wraps it up for today. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back with more on my YouTube channel at Father Roderick. Follow me on social media as well, and please say hi on the Discord server, and let me know that you're listening. It's still one of my favorite places to hang out with the community and to get some feedback from you. So take care until then, and we'll meet again soon. Bye-bye now.